Hello, everybody. My name is Tony Rialli, and I am the Coastal Program Coordinator for the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. As part of my position here at SACE, I manage a diverse network of environmental advocates, local elected officials, academics, renewable energy business owners, farmers, entrepreneurs, etc., from Maryland to Louisiana. What you see on your screen right now is a little bit about the Southeast Coastal Climate Network. This network is dedicated to fostering regional leadership in mitigating and adapting to the challenge of global warming. Our network promotes protection of the Southeast's uniquely vulnerable coastal resources by increasing local, state, and national awareness of the threats and opportunities posed by climate change. The host organization for the Southeast Coastal Climate Network is the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. And as I had mentioned earlier, this webinar is being recorded, and after this webinar, a PDF of the presentation as well as the podcast will be on our website, cleanenergy.org, under Multimedia, then Webinar Archive. You can see on the slide here the URL to join the Southeast Coastal Climate Network if you'd like. There's no obligation for participation. However, you would receive weekly climate and energy news updates as well as announcements regarding any webinar opportunities and things like that. If you are in Florida, we have a sister group of the Southeast Coastal Climate Network called the Florida Climate Alliance, and you can see the URL located there on the screen. Now, recognizing the importance of ensuring that local communities are well-informed and engaged in climate preparedness, the Southeast Coastal Climate Network, in partnership with ICLEI, Local Governments for Sustainability, have put together a webinar series focused on issues surrounding coastal climate adaptation in the southeastern United States. This is actually our sixth webinar in this series, and they've been wildly successful. And these climate adaptation webinars have been on a whole host of issues regarding climate adaptation in our region, and you can find those archived on our website. And again, that URL is on the screen, cleanenergy.org. I would now like to introduce Missy Stoltz, who is the Adaptation Manager with ICLEI, who will give a brief introduction as to what the wonderful things ICLEI has to offer local governments in our region and throughout the country. So, thank you again, Missy, for being our presenter today.
Thank you, Tony. Well, I certainly want to thank Tony, as well as the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, who, as Tony mentioned, ICLEI has been partnering with on this webinar series. And it's been a great pleasure, and we certainly consider you an important ally in helping local communities both advance their adaptation and their mitigation strategies. And I'd also like to welcome everyone to today's webinar. Thank you for taking time to join us in what we know is a very busy year. Today it's my pleasure to speak with you about ICLEI's Climate Resilient Communities Program, which is ICLEI's adaptation program. The intent of the Climate Resilient Communities Program, or what we call the CRC program, is to help local governments build their resilience towards climate change. And we want to do that so that the resilience we're building is socially just, it's economically sustainable, and certainly is environmentally savvy. Could we go to the next slide, please, Tony? Before I delve into the specifics of the CRC program, however, I first want to introduce you to ICLEI, Local Governments for Sustainability. Many of you on the line are ICLEI members. You're in ICLEI member communities. Many of you are not. So if you're in an ICLEI community, please forgive this. Otherwise, I hope you find this useful. ICLEI is an international membership association of local governments that are working on issues of climate protection and sustainability. Globally, there are over 1,200 local governments that are working with ICLEI, that are ICLEI members formally. Over 600 of those local governments are in the United States. In the United States, our membership ranges from the largest communities, literally New York City, Los Angeles County, to some of the smallest. We have our smallest ICLEI member community is about 530 people. So we have that full range of communities. ICLEI members have to be democratically appointed in local government. So effectively what we mean by that is they need to be cities, counties, towns, villages, boroughs, anything, again, that's local and is democratically appointed. At the last count, when we looked at the ICLEI members that we have in the U.S., about a third of the U.S. population resides in an ICLEI member community. So there's enormous reach in terms of the work that local governments are doing, their ability to impact social movements, to generate support in terms of mitigating, building sustainable communities, and adapting to weather and climate impacts. Taking a step back, ICWI's mission is really to build, serve, and drive a movement of local governments to advance significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and achieve what we call tangible improvements in local sustainability. ICWI strives to do that by developing tools, resources, information, and networking experiences really in three key areas: climate mitigation, which is what we've been best known for, climate adaptation, which again we're going to talk about today, and the broader concept of sustainability. And you can find out more about all of those other areas on our website, and we also have some other webinars if you'd like to delve into those topics. With that as a framing, what I'd now like to do is focus on that one core area that you're interested in today, which is adaptation. Thank you, Tony. Could you just hit the next slide, or just the next button? Thank you. The first step here at ICWI when we're working with local communities is making sure they understand what we're talking about when we talk about adaptation. Even when we're talking about climate planning broadly. Climate planning that we generally see, communities are doing one of two things. They're looking at climate mitigation or climate adaptation. And again, today we're focusing on climate adaptation. And when I talk about climate adaptation, what I'm talking about is any measure or action that reduces the negative impacts of climate change or increases new opportunities embedded in a changing climate. So inherent in this description is thinking about how climate is impacting us now, how it's going to impact us in the future in both positive and negative, potentially negative ways. So that's what we're going to focus on. Could you go to the next slide, please? Another type of climate planning, and one that I'm sure many of you are familiar with, is climate mitigation. Climate mitigation refers to any measure or action we take to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, things like renewable energy, smart growth, urban gardening, urban forestry, et cetera. Almost all of ICWI's members, those 600 local governments I spoke about before, almost all of them are working very actively in this category. We're working with a number of them on building adaptation into that repertoire of efforts. And this gets to a really important point that if you hear nothing else, for those of you working on mitigation, I want you to know that adaptation and mitigation do not have to be mutually exclusive strategies. In fact, what we mean here is that many adaptation strategies can also be mitigation strategies and vice versa. For example, water conservation can certainly help you reduce the energy that's embedded in treating water and moving water, and it can certainly be an adaptation strategy by increasing your resilience to water shortages, for example. So that would be a win-win strategy that we're looking to help our members identify as they're looking to build resilience and also reduce their carbon footprint. On ICWI's website, we have some additional guidance about other areas of win-win sort of strategic opportunities around adaptation and mitigation, and I'll show you a link to that in a little bit later in the presentation. Again, before we go on, for those of you in communities who haven't started adaptation planning, you may get asked, well, why do we need to plan for climate change? Nope, that's good. Next slide. You're doing great, Tony. There are a number of basic reasons for why undertaking adaptive planning is a logical step, and I just want to lay these out before we move forward. Some of the things we already know is that the climate is already changing. The world that we live in today is different than the world that we lived in 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, and we know that that change is likely to continue into the future. We also know that the way the climate system works, the things that we do today, and in fact the things we did yesterday, are inherently embedded in the climate system, meaning that we are going to continue to feel impacts of climate change regardless of what, if we cut emissions to zero today, 100% reduction, we would still see changes in our climate system. That, therefore, implies that we need to start planning. So again, today's choices shape tomorrow's vulnerabilities. We have the inherent opportunity to increase resilience to what's coming down the pipeline. We also know that significant time is required to motivate people and to develop solutions to help build adaptive capacity. And very importantly, we see this in every area of our life. Proactive planning is almost always more effective and less costly than reactive planning. And it can certainly provide immediate benefits in many of the areas in which we're operating. So these are some of the basic reasons why we're really focusing on adaptation and why it makes sense to start moving these efforts forward. Next slide, please. So now that we've taken a look at the difference between climate adaptation and mitigation, I'm just going to give you a little history about how Italy came to sort of the climate adaptation world. In 2005, because ICLEI is a local government association, we listen to our members and what local governments have to say they need. And in 2005, our members started articulating a need to figure out how they could for climate change. And they weren't sure how to do that, so many of them came to ICLEI and said, we're looking for guidance from you on how we can even start planning climate change. So what we did is we were very lucky to have some support from NOAA, and we conducted a pilot process where we selected 5 different communities and with them developed a milestone process for how they could begin planning for climate change. That was a very successful pilot process, and it allowed us in 2008 to take those lessons learned and to create a global sort of, or I guess I would say national program here at ICLEI that scaled those lessons learned for the 5 pilot communities into a broader program. That program is the Climate Resilient Communities Program, and that's what I'll spend the rest of the time talking to you about today. And if you fast forward to where we are right now, we are actively building all of the support resources that are embodied in that program to help communities like you work on your adaptation efforts. So moving forward, next slide please, let's take a look at exactly what that Climate Resilient Communities Program is. This is a screenshot from our website. But the Climate Resilient Communities Program is effectively a series of support tools, resources, information, trainings, and networking platforms that help local communities understand how the climate is already changing, how the climate is likely to change in the future, what that means for them in terms of vulnerabilities, and what they can do to increase their resilience to those vulnerabilities and those possible impacts. And we want to do this in a very strategic manner that helps recognize that there are enormous limitations on local governments, be it financial, staffing, existing constraints. So we want to do and design this program so that it can be institutionalized into the efforts that local governments are already doing. And let's talk about how we're doing that. So next slide, please. What you see before you is the basic planning process that ICLEI has developed to help guide members through the Climate Resilient Communities Program. This is called our 5 Milestones for Climate Adaptation, and it is the cornerstone of the CRC program we have here at ICLEI. This is basically a planning process. Many of you, this is going to look quite familiar because you've been through this before in your efforts. It starts, and I'm sorry, the slide's a little messy. It looks like it just got formatted funny. But effectively, it starts when you generate support and you make a commitment for doing some climate adaptation work. From there, it moves on to conducting a climate vulnerability assessment, setting goals, preparedness goals based on the vulnerabilities you've identified, creating a plan for how you're going to achieve those goals, implementing that plan, and then monitoring and measuring your progress and going back through the cycle. So this is an iterative process. It's very intuitive and very logical. So I'm going to walk you through each of these steps, and then I'm going to talk about the resources ICLEI has developed to help you complete these different steps in this process. Next slide, please. So the pre-milestone step, this is that getting started step. Many of you may find yourself in this position right now. So this is the first official step, and this involves conducting a very basic or preliminary assessment of how your climate and weather patterns are already changing. I'm looking at that and maybe coming up with some possible impacts for how those changes could manifest themselves in your area. Then using that information, you would go out and start messaging and building support for climate adaptation, finding appropriate stakeholders that need to be involved in your effort, finding climate champions in your community that can help you message and make the case for why your community needs to be planning for climate change. This milestone really is about building the commitment that you need and the support you need in order to move forward with the other steps in the process. The guidance that we have on this really talks about primarily communications. How do you communicate? How do you understand enough of the science about what's happening in your area now, as well as what's happening into the future or projected to happen in the future, as well as how you spread that message? What kind of medium do you use, messengers, et cetera? So at the end of this phase, hopefully you've generated the kind of support, you've got the commitment you need to move forward then into actually undertaking the next slide, which is the vulnerability assessment. Thank you, Tony. So this is milestone one. This is the first official step in the ICLEI adaptation program, which again is conducting a vulnerability assessment. And there are many ways to conduct a vulnerability assessment. They range from analyzing 1 to 2 systems of concern for your community. That may be if you're in an area that's very sensitive to drought, you may choose water as a system that you want to analyze, or it could range to doing an entire community-wide vulnerability analysis. And it's up to the discretion of the local community to determine what makes the most sense for them. But a vulnerability assessment, you've probably heard this term thrown around a lot. The way that we define it here at ICLEI is very closely in alignment with what we're seeing from the scientific literature, and that is an analysis of the sensitivity of a sector or a system, as well as a look at its adaptive capacity. And we have guidance at ICLEI that helps communities really understand what those terms mean, so look at the kind of questions you have to answer and ask in order to determine the sensitivity and the adaptive capacity of those systems. I'm not going to go into that. That's a completely separate training, but there is information about that for anyone that's interested in delving into this milestone in more detail. At a high level, when doing a vulnerability assessment, the main steps include assessing how the regional climate is already changing and how it's projected to change in the future, determining the systems or the individual infrastructure, for example, that's likely to be affected by that change, determining how those systems are likely to be impacted by the change, as well as how they're already affected. And that's a very important piece of this. What we're not trying to do is only think about future impacts. We want to recognize that communities are already vulnerable right here, right now, today. So we want to acknowledge that and think about how climate could exacerbate existing vulnerabilities and/or create new vulnerabilities. From that, after we collect that kind of information, a community then looks at the sensitivity, the adaptive capacity, and the exposure of a system to the particular changes that we've been researching. The next step then is to do what we would call identify key vulnerabilities by using some decision criteria that we've pulled from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and that helps a user basically take this list of vulnerabilities and prioritize them into the ones that they're going to start with first in terms of the rest of their planning process. So at the end of milestone one, users will have gotten a series of tools and guidance so that they can end with a list of key vulnerabilities that are of concern to their community that they're going to move forward with trying to build the adaptive capacity of. Okay, can we move on to the next slide? This is a big step. Milestone one, and we recognize across the board, the conducting of a vulnerability assessment can be a very time-consuming process. They can be very quantitative, and they can also be very qualitative. And it depends on your community and what your needs are and what resources you have at your disposal to determine what the best fit is. ICLEI has a lot of resources to help you determine what makes the best sort of sense given your context, but that's the broad idea about what we're looking to support communities in doing in terms of a vulnerability assessment. Milestone two, then, once a community has done their vulnerability assessment, is about establishing goals. So you've recognized how you're vulnerable and you've selected key vulnerabilities. It's time to figure out what's sort of the vision for the future in terms of reducing those vulnerabilities. So in this step, a community is going to reflect on the vulnerabilities in collaboration with a group of stakeholders, set goals for those vulnerable systems or places. And we want them to consider short, medium, and long-term goals, recognizing that adaptation certainly is a process and that they're going to have an iterative sort of dialogue around the success of meeting these goals. And very importantly, we want them to consider alignment with existing community priorities. So in this case, if your community has already made a commitment to sustainable development, aligning your adaptation goals with that commitment will enhance success overall. Next step, please. Next slide, please. The third milestone in the CRC program is the creation of a plan for how your community is going to meet those great goals that you just set. And this is generally what we call a preparedness plan. Then one important thing that I want to note is that right now ICLEI does not encourage our members to create a new plan. Many times you hear of someone thinking that maybe they'll create a climate adaptation plan. That's a separate document that just talks about adaptation. It is going to be up to your community to decide if that makes sense for you. From the ICLEI perspective, we are really looking for ways that communities can integrate climate preparedness into existing planning efforts. So we're looking at, once you set those goals, how do you integrate those goals into things like your multi-hazard mitigation planning or your emergency planning or your comprehensive and master planning. So what we want to do here is institutionalize this concept of resilience into existing priorities your community has. And we're working on some guidance on how to help communities do that. And we have a few projects we'll talk about at the end that are really trying to advance the work in that area. Here is part of this process then. All of you have probably been through this at some point. When you're creating a plan, you're going to have to brainstorm possible actions that you want to include in your plan. You're going to have to prioritize those actions and then select strategies that align with those prioritization criteria that you've identified. A key piece of Milestone 3 that ICLEI guides its members through is drafting implementation plans. So once you select actions, what we're trying to help them, our members do is create a strategy for how those actions can materialize. So we've got some guidance on how you identify who, what it is you're trying to do, what resources are available, the timing or the when of that process, and any other sort of things that may help move these strategies from plan to actual implementation. Can we do the next slide, please? Milestone 4 is the most important step from my perspective, and that is when you get to this point in a process, you've got a plan. But a plan doesn't do anything if you don't implement the plan. So here, this phase and the support ICLEI provides is about helping communities draft policies that need to be in place in order for them to move forward with building resilience. It's about looking at funding and resources, staffing, or information, and aggregating that and getting it to our members so they can do the work that they need to do. It's about accountability in the system, helping our members set timelines and helping check in with them, holding them accountable to those timelines. That's a key piece of what we're trying to do, and absolutely sharing successes across this ICLEI network. So we have these 600 local governments doing this work. Let's find out what's successful in a community and extrapolate that and see if that lesson learned and that best practice can be transferred somewhere like Lee County, Florida. Let's think about sort of that scalability and that transferability. And that's a large piece of what we do here at ICLEI, is help to sort of share the best practices across, as well as the lessons learned, across this network that we've created. And another important piece is we do a very poor job, I would say, in the field of celebrating our successes. And so part of what we're trying to do is make sure our members get the recognition that they deserve for the great work that they're doing. So we've got a media team here, and we've got a lot of creative ways that we can get your story of the work that you're doing in press, in social networks, via Facebook, Twitter, et cetera. We can tell your story at international or national conferences. We want to celebrate the work that you're doing and help you maintain that momentum so you can continue doing this really important work. Move on to the next slide, please. The last step in the process then is monitoring, evaluating, and reassessing. And this is really about gauging the overall effectiveness of the strategies and the work that you've been doing to date to build your community's resistance. So during this phase, we encourage communities also to go back to Milestone 1 and reevaluate their vulnerability assessment. We're getting new information all of the time about science, and we're getting better data, downscaled data, for example, that we can apply to see if vulnerabilities. Perhaps we have more insight into our vulnerabilities. Perhaps we learned something going through this first process that we didn't include in the vulnerability assessment. And so this stage is really about the continuation of the work and building on that great foundation that you've established to continue moving your community's resilience forward. And as you can probably tell, this is really a living iterative process, this 5-milestone process I've outlined. But again, it's really about building preparedness and recognizing that the concept of resilience moves and evolves similar to the concept of sustainability. So communities, as they move through this process, we're seeing them grow in their level of sophistication in terms of the work that they can do. Next slide, please. So that's a quick look at the 5-milestone process. That's, again, the underlying framework. So as ICLEI members or as a community interested in adaptation, that's the framework that ICLEI is going to help you move through. Now, you don't have to do it in a linear fashion. You certainly can jump around. Whatever makes sense for your community, we can help you tailor that. But what I want to do now is talk about the resources that ICLEI has to help support local governments in moving through that. Next slide, please. I hope this is familiar to many of you. In 2005, as I mentioned, ICLEI formally began our work on adaptation. And one of the ways that we did this was through that NOAA funding. And we also partnered at this point, once we had sort of conceptualized with these pilot communities the five milestone process we just walked through, we decided we wanted to work collaboratively with some really great movers in the adaptation world to develop a guidebook that shared that those lessons that we learned from piloting this work with the rest of effectively the world. So what we did is we partnered with King County, Washington, and the Climate Impacts Group out of the University of Washington, and we developed the Preparing for Climate Change guidebook. So this is a free resource. It's downloadable on the ICLEI website. It was published in late 2007 and went effectively live in 2008. And it provides detailed guidance on how to plan for climate change adaptation. So everything we've just talked through in terms of the milestones, this guide goes into a little bit more detail about how do you actually do that. It's a great resource. Again, it is free, downloadable on the ICLEI website, and you'll see the URL for where you can download this at the end of the presentation. So it's one of the main resources that we have available right now. We are working with our partners to seek funding to update the guidebook. Again, 2008 is when it was launched. We've done a lot of work since then in the field, and we have new methodologies and new processes that we'll be integrating into a revised version. So stay tuned. We'll certainly let you all know when the revised guidebook is available for public consumption. So moving on to the next slide. One of the newest resources that ICLEI has developed is our new tool called ADAPT, and this stands for the Adaptation Database and Planning Tool. ADAPT is an online data management and planning tool that's designed to help guide local communities through those five milestones that we just walked through. ADAPT is effectively the living version of the Planning for Climate Change guidebook that I just showed you. And there's some modifications in there in ADAPT that reflect, again, that state-of-the-art information that we've gained from our last 5 years of working in the field of adaptation. ADAPT is only available to ICLEI member communities, but what it's designed to do is help you seamlessly move through those five milestones. It was developed with local governments, and that was really, that's a very, very important piece of much of the work we do here at ICLEI, because it helps to ensure that the tool is useful for and usable by local governments, who again are ICLEI's key constituents. So the tool, what you're seeing right now is a screenshot of the first module of the tool, which focuses on helping you get started. And so there are sub-pages within this tool that focus on things from a first look at climate impacts, which has a populated database. You select your region of the country, and then the tool will automatically list from NOAA reports historic impacts that have happened in your area, as well as projected future impacts. So you can get a very quick look at the kinds of things that may be relevant to your community. And then we encourage users to use that information to help message climate change and build support. So again, this tool is a really exciting tool that we have here at ICLEI. It is in pilot testing right now. So if you're an ICLEI member community, please feel free to go in, test this tool, give us your feedback. We're always looking to enhance it. Moving on to the next slide, please. We have a lot of hard tools at ICLEI, and we're constantly looking to develop them, and ADAPT is an example of a hard tool. But we also know that communities want and need to learn from each other. And that's why we regularly produce case studies that tell the story of adaptation efforts in different communities within the ICLEI network. And not only do these case studies seek to tell a story, they seek to provide some really important guidance, which is what worked in these communities and what didn't work. And we're hoping that by extracting those best practices and lessons learned, we can help other communities avoid challenges that these communities have encountered and seize on the lessons that they've learned in terms of successful strategies. So these are all available publicly to anyone. So if you're an ICLEI member community or not, you could go onto our website and download any of our case studies. This is just an example of three of the case studies that we have out. And as you can see, they're from all over. We've got Keene, New Hampshire, Miami-Dade County, Florida, and Homer, Alaska are just the three we've got profiled here. Next slide, please. Additionally, you know, those are just sort of categories. We have a slew of other support resources for local governments to help them with their adaptation efforts. The ones I have listed here are all free, including things like guidance on integrating adaptation and mitigation, co-planning strategies. That's on our website and free for anyone. We've got some tips on financing adaptation, talking points for you on why preparing for climate change is important. We also have a quarterly newsletter that we put out, which provides information on things like the latest adaptation news, both internationally and domestically, as well as funding opportunities that we think our members should be cognizant of around building resilience at the local level. And we also do webinar series. Clearly, we do webinar series, as you're all on a webinar. But we also have webinars that are topically focused. So we've got a series right now on public health. And that's certainly a really important point of entry for many communities in terms of their adaptation work. So that's something I encourage you to take a look at. And we're also looking right now to kick off a webinar series on the insurance industry and insurance issues surrounding climate change and adaptation. So stay tuned for more. That will be publicly available, and we anticipate that kicking off early second quarter. And again, all of these resources are on the ICLEI website. Next slide, please. One of the unique things about ICLEI's work in comparison to some other efforts that are out there is that our work is directly guided by local governments, aka, again, our end users, and local governments are who we work with. And at ICLEI, we do this in a number of ways. The most notable way is through a steering committee of local governments that directly helped me build our adaptation program. And there are 22 local government different local governments that are represented on this committee, and they meet every 4 to 6 weeks. And they provide the strategic direction and the input necessary to help us formulate our work plan. So, for example, in a meeting a few weeks ago, we had a great discussion about what the next priorities or the priorities should be for the next 18 months. And one of the key things articulated was communicating climate change. They articulated it was challenging. They didn't have all the tools and resources they need to be effective in doing that. And so we will work collaboratively to craft a proposal on communicating, advancing the ability of local communities to communicate climate change to their residents. So that's an example of how we really listen to our local governments and work with them to make sure we're meeting their needs. Another thing we have at ICLEI is an advisory committee. And this is an adaptation expert advisory committee that's composed of 12 academic experts in various different sectors of our economy. They include experts in insurance, natural systems, engineering, water, social vulnerability, urban adaptation, communications, natural hazards, et cetera. And this group provides certainly some of the strategic direction for the adaptation work we do, but they also make sure that everything we do has the state-of-the-art information and is scientifically rigorous, based in sound science. They partner with us on some proposals to help move these efforts forward. All of the individuals, you can see the list of the individuals on our website, and if you can read the slide, they're listed here. All of them are what I would call practical scientists. They're doing really cutting-edge work, but they want it to be useful. And so they're working with ICLEI to make sure that the work that they're doing and the research that they're undertaking actually has relevance and it will be used by local communities. So it's a very, very unique context we have here at ICLEI and something we definitely think provides enormous value to the program that we're creating. One other thing that I'll just talk about quickly is we have an international adaptation survey that will be kicked off in a few weeks, and the intent there is to hear, again, from local governments about what's working and what's not working in adaptation, what are success stories, what are barriers, whether real or perceived, that you're facing, and then we will take that and apply it to the development of our program here, the CRC program, so we can help meet those barriers that local governments are facing. Next slide, please. To close, I want to briefly discuss three projects that are ongoing here at ICLEI that we think will have national relevance. The first is a project to develop a tool that allows for what we're calling streamlined access to climate information. And this is a tool that we're going to develop as a pilot in the state of Connecticut. It's called ART, the Adaptation Resource Toolbox. And we're working with stakeholders in Connecticut, including local governments and the developers of climate-relevant information. And the idea is really to understand, can we do this? Can we create a central repository of all of the types of climate information that exist? Is it useful if we do create that resource? Will end users use it? And then also look at how would we have to construct it so it would be usable? So it's a big concept. It is funded through an EPA Climate Ready Estuaries grant, and we're looking at seeing if this can be done in a single state, can we then expand it? Can it be expanded to a regional database, or could it even be a national database? This is slated to be completed in September, so we'll certainly be updating people on the progress of that effort. Next slide, please. An exciting project that we're working on as well is looking at integrating climate change into hazard mitigation planning. And in this case, we are piloting a project in Lewis, Delaware, in partnership with Delaware Sea Grant. And this is where we're working with the Hazard Mitigation Committee and stakeholders within the community to understand how are you already vulnerable to natural hazards, and then overlaying climate and saying, okay, well, how is climate exacerbating these vulnerabilities you already have and or creating new vulnerabilities for you? So effectively, what we're doing is changing the planning paradigm from planning on historic hazards to thinking about future hazards and how climate will create new or more exacerbated hazards. This is a pretty exciting project. We're reaching the end. We should be done by early summer, and we'll have some recommendations certainly for the community about how they can integrate this into their planning, but also looking at perhaps scaling this with partners to really think about a national model for how you can integrate climate change into these important planning processes. And next slide. The last project I just want to touch on quickly, adaptation is certainly something that has to happen at multiple scales. So there are things you can do at your local level to build resilience, and there are things you will have to do regionally at the state level, and there are some things that will have to be done nationally. So recognizing that scale factor as part of building resilience, we are undertaking a few projects looking at regional efforts to collaborate and build resilience. One of them is a regional sea level rise project we're doing in San Diego Bay, and that focuses on 5 municipalities as well as the Port of San Diego, and really looking across the board to how sea level rise will impact built natural, social, and economic systems within that region and what they can do to work across geopolitical boundaries to increase resilience. This is a really exciting project. It's slated to be done at the end of 2011, and it'll have certainly a vulnerability assessment for the whole region, as well as identification of strategies that the region can actually move forward with to increase resilience to sea level rise. A side part of this is the formation of all of these partnerships. So we're starting to see connections being formed where people in different systems, such as a natural resource manager and someone in the economic system, are starting to collaborate in ways that weren't happening before. So this is a really important project for us here at ICLEI. We think this has a lot of national relevance, and we'll certainly be working moving forward on regional preparedness. Next slide, please. So what's next? Certainly those three projects we're going to continue working on. But again, because we want to be relevant to local governments, we listen to local governments. So what we know we need to develop are some guides around communicating climate change, integrating climate into existing planning processes, looking at indicators of success. Those are things that we've heard from local governments and we'll keep working on. But what I'd like to hear, and this is not just today, but throughout, as you and your community start adaptation, what do you need? What would help you be successful in building resilience? What barriers are you facing? Because, again, what we want to do is help you be successful in your work. So with that, I'll turn it to the last slide and just open it up for any questions that anyone has. And thank you all very much for your time.
Missy, thank you once again for an excellent webinar. We have quite a few questions, and I'd like to go ahead and get started on those. Again, Missy, thank you so much for your time and for sharing all of your information with us. Certainly exciting tools for local communities to be using. So the first question is, what qualities of leadership or other factors distinguish those communities that are serious about adaptive planning from those who are not?
It's an excellent question, and it's probably one of the things we've seen most commonly with the people jumping up front, the community starting to do adaptation work, has been the commitment of leadership. Having a strong mayor or council that supports this work has been important. In places like New York City, Mayor Bloomberg actually sent out the invitations to his committee to start working on adaptation, so that certainly has been quite influential. In other communities, I'd say what we've seen is a strong staff lead, someone from, you know, within sort of local government that recognizes this is important and has the ear perhaps of the mayor or the city manager, council, et cetera, and is able to sort of take this and run with it. But we always see a champion. I haven't seen this move forward where you don't have a clear indication of who's going to be leading this work.
Very good. Thank you. Can you discuss decommissioning of potentially hazardous coastal facilities, for example, petroleum storage or nuclear facilities? And when, in your opinion, should they begin to work on this?
And decommissioning of those facilities? This is a really tough topic for me to go into. I think I don't have all of the information, certainly, to answer that across the board. I'd say what would need to happen, not just with certain nuclear facilities, et cetera, but with anything, any infrastructure systems that we have in vulnerable places, is we need to understand how they're vulnerable. We also need to understand their adaptive capacity, and then we need to collectively make decisions about whether or not we can, is it something we need to protect? Do we need to harden? Do we need to retreat? Do we need to rebuild somewhere else? Those are decisions that have to be made at the local level based on local circumstance with stakeholders. So I would just say the important steps up front are you need to understand how that system or infrastructure is vulnerable, what its capacity is to deal with its potential vulnerability, and then you need to explore options that make sense locally.
Okay, thank you, Ms. To what degree does this planning enhance economic development in Inklee communities?
Another really good question. We don't have a lot of hard data on this point, but right now what we're sort of seeing and what's been modeled is that this is something that's incredibly important in terms of economic sustainability and generating new economic revenue. What I mean here, there's a number of ways to spin that. We have a whole new opportunity for entrepreneurial people to step forward in terms of resilience strategies. So we could see new markets coming up and thinking about how you actually build resilience and bridge the resilience of a bridge to flooding, for example. So we've got a whole bunch of possible market opportunities that exist. We also know that businesses plan for longer-term horizons than we generally tend to do as individuals in our lives. So if we can demonstrate that we have secure water resources and we put a plan into place to make sure that they have the water they need to run their factory, that is going to generate a certain certain stability perhaps that's going to be necessary in terms of their operation. And we are seeing a lot of large corporations really start to step up to the plate in terms of their adaptation work. From Coca-Cola, we've also seen Walmart doing some, really good work in this area. So we know that they're thinking on these kinds of time horizons. And we also know from the economic data that the cost of inaction can be crippling in some areas, and so it's economically wise to start planning for these things now, because the retribution, if we don't, could be, again, crippling.
Thank you. And to follow up on that, can we make the argument that this type of planning process leads to green or clean energy job growth?
Yeah, I absolutely think we can. This goes back to sort of that adaptation mitigation synergy here, but there are parts of the country, again, it sort of depends on what the vulnerabilities are where you are, but right now in the Northeast, for example, one of our vulnerabilities is from our grid. Our grid in many places is at max capacity, and so if we have warmer summers, that's going to mean most likely that we have more air conditioning running. More air conditioning could collapse that grid. If we have more people on renewable energy systems or distributed generation, we take that demand down and we reduce our vulnerability to collapses. That's a win-win strategy across the board. It's a mitigation win, and it's absolutely an adaptation win. So I think there are those kinds of connections that we'll start to see being formulated.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, next question is your program designed to be self-implemented, or is it designed to have an ICLEI member as an active partner?
It is absolutely designed to be implemented by the local government with support, if needed, from ICLEI. What I mean by that is ICLEI is small in terms of staff. For 600 local governments, we have about 45 staff here in the U.S. So our job is to empower local governments, give them the tools, the trainings, so they can do this work. And then we're there for technical support and to help really innovate and move the field forward. But the idea is, to give you the resources at the local level you need to be successful.
Okay, thank you. And can you talk just really briefly about how there may be someone on this call who is interested in becoming an ICBLE partner for their community? Can you talk about what is the first thing they should do?
Absolutely. If you're not an ICBLE member community, one of the first things you could do is get your community to actually join ICBLE and become involved in that network. Doing that sort of opens the door to access to all of these resources. Once you're an ICBLE member community, then, you know, if you've got the interest in this topic, we need a champion in these communities who's going to move, again, this work forward. It would be quite strategic if you've got the time and the interest. You could be that person, that catalyst, to help your local community advance and advance your resilience and or your broader sustainability work.
And a follow-up to that, are there grant opportunities available for local communities or those local leaders to participate in these ICBLE programs?
Yeah, actually, even just today, we sent out, anyone that is on our listserv, you probably saw this, we've got confirmation from the Department of Energy that your EECBG money, your Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant money, you can allocate some of that to become ICBLE members. So, because they recognize that ICBLE has a lot of the resources to help communities in this work. So that's an acceptable use. So that's one thing if you've got those resources available. ICBLE membership is based on population size. It is completely my opinion on this, but I think it's incredibly reasonable. An annual membership due, for example, if you're under 50,000 people, is $600. So everything I just spoke to you about, you get for $600 a year. So generally speaking, we have a lot of data to demonstrate the return on investment. I mean, it's something like 2 months you can pay that back. And it, again, depends on sort of how active your local community is. Other point is we monitor grant and foundation funding opportunities. We have staff that spend quite a bit of time looking at that. So if we find funding opportunities relevant, we circulate that to our membership. We'll host webinars with the funders to help our members get a leg up and understand what it is the funder's really looking for. And then we also sometimes hold webinars on how you write proposals, things that can help our members really enhance their success rate.
Oh, that's excellent. I appreciate that. Another follow-up question, can counties join ICBLE?
Absolutely, absolutely. So cities, towns, villages, counties, all can join ICBLE. Anything that is democratically appointed, who right now cannot be an ICBLE member would be something like a regional planning agency. That would not, we partner with them on efforts, but counties absolutely are very active members of ICBLE.
Thank you. And before I move on to the next question, I'd like to remind people to go ahead and chat in your questions, or if you would prefer to verbally ask your question, go ahead and raise your hand by pressing that yellow hand on your control panel. So, Missy, does ICBLE have any information about how to communicate climate change?
Yes. It's a great question, and I know who's asking that question. So, Zach, if that is you, the question, we have a number of resources. Is it?
Mm-hmm. It's Tasha Allen.
Okay, great. We have a number of resources in this area. Most notably, we've got a communications guidebook. This is free to anyone. You don't have to be an ICBLE member. On our website, and it talks about what I would say the three primary things are in messaging, which is the message. You have to craft the right message. The medium, how are you delivering that message? And the messenger, who's delivering that message. So there's a lot of guidance in that guidebook that was developed, and we worked with a communications firm to produce that. So that's on our website and available. We are also working on a communications webinar right now with some communications experts from around the U.S. to help our members do this. And then sort of in the future, looking ahead, this is, as I mentioned, one of the areas where our members unanimously have asked for more help and more support on. So we've just created or in the process of creating a subcommittee of members that will help us craft a proposal on exactly what it is they need to help advance communication issues so we can then get funding to start work on developing those resources.
That's excellent. Absolutely. SACE also has some information on communicating climate change, and I can, if anybody wants to email me, tony@cleanenergy.org, I'm happy to send that along. And perhaps, Missy, we can craft a follow-up email to all of our participants with some of the links to the things that we've talked about today. That might be helpful.
Absolutely, Tony.
Okay, so I don't have any further questions that have been chatted in. If there's anybody who would like to ask their question verbally, go ahead and raise your yellow hand. Just press that yellow hand button, and you can unmute yourself by pressing *6. Perhaps while we're waiting for folks to maybe chat in their question or raise their hand, I would like to let folks know, or just remind folks who may have joined a little late, that SACE and ICLEI have been putting on, this is our 6th webinar in our climate adaptation webinar series, and I'd like to thank ICLEI, specifically Missy and Daniela, for helping put together or helping partner with us on this excellent webinar series, and all of the archived presentations as well as the podcasts are on cleanenergy.org under Multimedia, then Webinar Archive. And we will have another one. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead on the webinar.
Yes, we have another webinar tentatively scheduled now for February 18th, so save the date on that. I just confirmed with Skip Stiles, who I believe is on the phone today, and we're going to talk about the costs of climate inaction. And Skip Stiles is with Wetlands Watch up in Virginia. So we're very pleased about that. So I don't have anyone who has chatted in any further questions. Is there anything, Missy, that you'd like to say in conclusion?
Yeah. One thing I would just like to sort of advertise for people, get it on your radar, is one of the things ICLEI's been initiated last year was something called the Resilient Cities Conference. And this is an international conference of local governments, as well as scientists, banks, lenders, et cetera, to really, really advance the understanding around how we build preparedness to climate change at the local level. And this year, Resilient Cities will be taking place June 3rd through 5th. It is in Bonn, Germany, and it's tied to the climate talks that happen about 6 months before the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change meeting. It's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to go and be with some of the best and brightest that are there to help you as local communities do this work. If you are interested in Resilient Cities, we are trying to pull a relatively large contingent of U.S. communities to attend. So if you're interested, please do let me know, and we can talk more about the details. But I'd love to see strong representation from the states there this year.
Great, thank you.
I was just going to say, other than that, I just want to encourage everyone, if you have ideas, barriers that your community is facing, you know, Tony and I would love to hear those. That kind of information directly feeds into the work that we do and the tools that we develop. So please, you know, as you start implementing this in your community, we want your feedback.
Very good. And one last question chatted in by Tanya Cobb is, if we are an academic institution that is working with communities on adaptation, can we access your free tools?
As of right now, the answer is no. The communities can access those tools, and they can work with you in partnership in those tools, but they are designed for local governments directly. And this goes back to what part of our mission is, really to empower the local government to do this work. So we try to give the resources directly to them with the support to do and institutionalize this work. However, that said, we do partner with academic institutions all of the time to help advance this work and make sure, again, it's sort of relevant and scientifically accurate. So certainly if the right circumstance presents itself, we can discuss that in a one-on-one situation.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Missy. And again, this will be archived on SACE's website at cleanenergy.org. I hope to have it up no later than tomorrow morning. And if anybody would like to stay in the loop on these webinar opportunities, you can email me at Tony, T-O-N-I, at cleanenergy.org. And Missy's information is here on the screen, not your email address, but you can find her spelling of her name and her title here, and you can look her up online. Thank you again so much, Missy, and everyone, I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Tony. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.